This episode is brought to you by Curie Briefs, the smartest 3-minute read in medicine. Think of it like mental floss for busy clinicians. Sharp, concise, and clinically relevant. Check it out today at Curie.md. And now, on to the show.
Every couple of years, it seems that medicine gets a new miracle technology. But artificial intelligence? Well, AI has had a special kind of hype attached to it. The kind where people say things like, it's going to diagnose every disease, it's going to discover every drug, and it's going to replace half of all doctors. Which, if you're a physician, is not exactly the most relaxing LinkedIn headline to scroll past during your lunch break. But what if that's not actually what's happening? What if the real impact of AI in medicine is something subtler and more interesting? Something like this. AI is very good at pattern recognition, but medicine is the act of deciding which patterns matter. And that second part, the deciding, is very human. So to get into this, I want to share 4 reflections from Dr. Lloyd Minor, Dean of Stanford School of Medicine. Not about AI as science fiction, but AI as it's actually being used by clinicians right now. So let's get into it. Let's start with diagnosis, the thing everyone assumes AI is going to swoop in and automate, like a self-checkout kiosk for differential diagnoses, except that's not really what's happening. Here's Lloyd Minor.
I'm reminded of the statement attributed to many that we tend to overestimate what we can accomplish in the short term and underestimate what we can accomplish in the long term. And I think perhaps we're seeing some of that play out today as we deploy AI in all aspects of life, but in particular what we're talking about today, AI in the application to healthcare and discovery science, life sciences. Now, on the first topic of how is AI impacting today, AI impacting the diagnosis of diseases and the selection of the correct treatment for diseases, and in general, how do we identify the right patient for the right therapy at the right time? I'm reminded of, you know, I'm probably best known in my field, which is the way the inner ear balance system works, and the field of otology and neurotology, because I described an inner ear disorder in 1998, developed a surgical procedure to fix it. For many, many years after those first papers were published, in which I and my colleagues described the syndrome and then had a bunch of follow-up studies, still, most of the patients coming to see me diagnosed themselves from doing a Google search at the time. And, you know, there was a lot of concern when the internet first came widely available, and people were talking about Dr. Google and how Dr. Google is going to get us in trouble. And for sure, there are examples of that. But the fact is, I think if you look on balance, and we're now, before we talk about the AI era, just the value of search, search has really democratized access to medical information, and I think has helped many, many people and many, many physicians. Fast forward now to AI, and everything that I think search has enabled us to do, and improving access to information, and then applying that information to diagnostic situations, I think we're seeing that the effects of AI and taking that to a whole new level. You know, is it going to eliminate the role of a physician diagnostician in the near future? No, I don't think so. But just in the short years, you know, what ChatGPT was introduced in November 2022, just in the relatively short period of time, less than 3 years since its introduction, we've already seen evolution of the models. We've seen fewer hallucinations, and we've seen more accurate, focused information coming back for them. So today, I think many physicians are using large language models to assist in diagnoses. What we've done here at Stanford, and many of our colleagues at other institutions have done the same, is that we've in-licensed models so that We can actually put elements of the medical record into a large language model, but in a secure, closed environment so that there's no breach of patient privacy. But in order for physicians to get information back on, you know, a series of rare findings in a patient, and how do you fit all those together? And in particular, when you're selecting a therapy and you're selecting a medication, and maybe you don't know what the probability of an adverse reaction to that medication is in that patient, because that individual patient has a constellation of medical findings that isn't necessarily readily apparent in the knowledge base of the physician or in the medical record.
So AI isn't replacing clinical reasoning. It's making it easier to do the thinking you were already doing. Kind of like giving your brain a second search engine. But this leads us to the first big tension point. If AI helps us see more, are we going to treat more? AI is very good at detecting subtle abnormalities, but finding more is not the problem. Understanding whether it matters is the problem. Here's Miner explaining this with a cardiology example that every physician will feel deeply in their soul.
Yes, I think it's a valid concern. And I believe we've seen that risk and the manifestations of that risk with the introduction of every new medical technology. For example, now a standard way to evaluate the function of the heart is through an echocardiogram. It's a non-invasive study, involves no exposure to ionizing radiation. The equipment and the technology has become very sophisticated. You can get accurate measurements of the size of each of the chambers of the heart, the pumping function of the heart, the thickness of the wall of the muscle, the diameter of the valves in the heart, huge amount of information. And guess what? There are findings, probably more commonly than not. The valves has a little bit different, or the aortic root is maybe a little bit larger than we typically see in a person of that age. And then what do you do with that information? So that's, and we go through waves where perhaps until we get enough medical knowledge to know that that slight enlargement of the aortic root or whatever is not that significant. And maybe the echocardiogram should be repeated in a couple of years or 5 years, but nothing should be done at the time. But until we got that knowledge and understanding, there were probably people that did undergo further workup and maybe even some that underwent procedures. So I think any new technology has that concern, that risk, and it ultimately is dependent upon its responsible use. However, echocardiography has vastly improved our treatment of common cardiac diseases, enabled us to know when we need to intervene, enable us to know how to adjust medications, how to judge a patient's risk factor for a variety of different conditions later on. So I don't think we would do away with it, but there's been a curve, an evolutionary curve of understanding how it can be appropriately used and how findings that may deviate from the, quote, normal need to be interpreted in the broader context of the patient's health and of the status of the heart.
The tool is not the medicine. The interpretation is the medicine, which brings us to the core of the episode. There's a misconception that the best physicians are the ones who know the most, as if medicine were a memory competition. But medicine was never really about memorization. Medicine is about reasoning with uncertainty. Here's Miner.
You know, medical education, the best analogy I know of has been it's somewhat akin to learning foreign language. What do you have to learn? What do you have to do to learn and communicate in a foreign language? You have to know the vocabulary, you have to know the grammar, then you've got to be able to synthesize and put together the vocabulary and the grammar in order to communicate with someone else and interpret what you're hearing back from them or reading, in the case of reading the text in a foreign language. In medical education, we have to know the vocabulary of medicine, we have to know the grammar, which is how the body works, the biochemistry, the way the organ systems interact with each other, and then we have to put that together when we're seeing a patient, to synthesize a diagnosis, come up with a treatment plan, and then carry out that treatment plan, obviously in combination with the patient and their family. Now, where along that spectrum will AI be a disruptor? Well, in terms of the vocabulary, knowing sort of the medical information, as you pointed out, AI is really good at that. It's only going to get better. There's no turning back. So, and we'd already started to move away from, thank goodness, some medical memorization. I mean, when I was in medical school, not only did we memorize, you know, the names of drugs, their mechanisms of actions, we had to memorize their dosages. And that was terrible because the human brain's not, you know, isn't designed to keep arcane numbers accurately. And the consequence of making an error is significant. Well, now, of course, we don't do that because dosages are generally calculated based upon the patient's height, weight, and other characteristics. And we maybe to have some general knowledge, but that's taken care of with a lot of checks and balances in the background. One can envision AI, you know, taking that a few steps further and actually identifying what the correct medication is. And then the real issue from the standpoint of the role of the physician is, how do you evaluate that information coming back from AI to know, yeah, this seems right, or no, I don't think so, and I'm going to push it a little further. I'm going to question it. The risk is, as you said, that we become, and you cited the example of colonoscopies and AI identifying suspicious lesions, and then gastroenterologists not becoming as as accurate as they were before without AI, and that's a concern too. Although there are other cases of where technologies have sort of gone beyond what traditional skills may have been. For example, before brain imaging, neurological exam neurologists. Could do exquisitely accurate, fine-tuned exams that could take hours, and they could generally pinpoint the lesion from very, very subtle clinical findings. In the age of MRI, the need for that has really has gone away. It's an elegant form of medical physical exam and reasoning, but it just doesn't have much of a place when we can get such accurate imaging, or at least not the same place that it did, 40, 50 years ago before we had MRIs. So I think there's some evolutionary process here where, yes, there are some things that the AI is going to take care of and take care of once it's trained better than humans will. But until we get to that point, we definitely need to be careful about moving too quickly away from the knowledge and skill set that has enabled us to get to the point where we are.
So AI finds patterns, but clinicians determine meaning. And nowhere is that more obvious than in drug discovery. You've probably seen headlines claiming AI is about to revolutionize pharmaceuticals, and maybe it will, but just not anytime soon. Here's why.
DeepMind, which is now part of Google, a number of years ago published a large language model or made available a large language model that can predict and calculate the structure of any protein by knowing its amino acid sequence. And it turns out to be amazingly accurate in doing that. Okay, if you're designing a protein, a biological drug, protein-based drug, and you know the structure of the receptor, you know the structure of your protein, but you want to manipulate the structure of your protein just a little bit, then you can, with the simulation, move amino acids around and look at how the structure of the protein changes and make a prediction then, oh, this is probably the molecule I want. This is the protein I want. That has to be experimentally validated, but before, you'd be doing a lot of guesswork. You could do some calculations based upon the charges of the amino acid, how they interact with one another. But the model is so much better than any calculations that were made before AlphaFold was introduced. Now we're seeing a similar approach being used for nucleic acid structure and function. So today has this has the application of AI to processes of drug discovery massively changed the drug discovery process? No, it hasn't. A lot of the approaches that are being used today by the many companies that are deploying AI is to get as much biological information as you can. So if you're working on the liver, you know, get slide after slide after slide of liver disease and pathology in a variety of different situations, all very, very well annotated. And then, you know, train your models based upon that biological data that you have absolute confidence in, and then start to do manipulations and make inferences from a database that is as pure as you can get for the need that you have in your drug discovery process. That's a logical approach. It's also, you know, and in this approach, the AI process is actually not the most difficult part of the process. The most difficult part is getting all the biological data in to train the model as well as you can. And that takes time. And so, again, it gets back to the statement, we tend to overestimate what we can accomplish in a short period of time, underestimate the long period of time. I think on a scale of 5 to 10 years, that AI is going to dramatically change drug discovery processes. But it's proving to be a longer time scale than I think some people had thought when it was first introduced.
So here's where we land. AI is not the doctor. It's not the diagnosis. It's not the treatment plan. AI is the instrument. And medicine is the performance. Because pattern recognition is not care. And accuracy is not compassion. And no AI model, no matter how many parameters, can sit with someone in the uncertainty of being sick. AI may eventually become extraordinary at surfacing possibilities, but deciding which possibility ultimately matters. In this body, for this patient, at this moment, that is still and will remain a human act. The future is not AI versus physicians. The future is physicians who know how to think with AI. That's the work, and that work is still deeply human. All right, that's it for today's episode. If you found this conversation meaningful, or want more content like it, you can find all of that at curie.md. We publish new briefs, podcasts, and games for healthcare professionals every week. That's curie.md. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.